from Springfield. This is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Saying Naperville is family-friendly, people held a rally against the sale of recreational marijuana.
It could hurt our brand, not help it. So why bring it here? There's nothing family-friendly about recreational marijuana.
While the door for recreational sales is closed for now, the city council agreed to possibly send the issue to the voters. A referendum could be on the ballot next March.
If we were to max out the number of dispensaries allowed, I think very conservatively you can look at a couple $1 million in revenues.
That was Naperville Mayor Steve Chirico. We also heard from resident Jennifer Bruzan Taylor, who created the opt-out campaign. She and her like-minded recreational marijuana skeptics were successful in getting Naperville city government to vote to prohibit recreational marijuana dispensaries in the city, at least for now. We're going to be talking about that this week on State Week. We're also going to be talking about Aaron Schock, former congressman, who is now formally clear of the federal charges against him. Plus, election season begins. We're hearing more about who will be in and who will be out running for office next year. I'm Brian Mackey, State House reporter for Illinois Public Radio. Joining us from the studios of NPR Illinois on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield is Charlie Wheeler. The script says director of the public affairs reporting program at UIS, but I can say newly retired former director of the public affairs reporting program at UIS, also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Charlie, congratulations on your retirement.
Thank you, Brian.
And joining us on the line this week is Amanda Vinicky of WTTW News and the show Chicago Tonight airs on PBS up in Chicago. Amanda, always great to talk to you. Welcome back to State Week.
Aw, thanks. Good to be back.
All right, so Naperville votes to bar recreational marijuana sales in the city. Just in case people are not familiar, this is one of the big suburbs of Chicago. It's in the western, southwestern suburbs, pretty affluent area. I think it's in the top five cities in Illinois in population. Amanda, can you kind of give us the lowdown? What was at stake here before we even get to what the city council did? You know, what? Tell us about this marijuana law and what it lets municipalities do.
As everybody in Illinois has to know by now, come January, it will be legal to buy marijuana beyond just for medicinal use, as has been the case here in Illinois for some years now. And in fact, Naperville has one of these, quote, dispensaries, a.k.a. a store, that sells medical marijuana right now. And evidently that's gone okay. But the recreational marijuana legalization law does allow, and this is presumably one of the elements that helped to get that over the finish line so that any legislators who were really on the fence with whether this is the right way to go or not could say, hey, there's local control, using that term, a favorite of former Governor Bruce Rauner is coming on back here, where municipalities have the opportunity to say, no, we don't want to participate. And that is, in fact, what Naperville voted to do. It's interesting because I had covered this some weeks ago when there was a preliminary vote and there was a tie. And instead, on Tuesday, when the Naperville City Council took this vote, that had flipped. There was clearly a whole lot of pressure from the community, with people saying they wanted Naperville, which, as you noted, is known as an affluent suburb with good schools and such, saying they wanted to keep it family focused. The final vote was actually 6-3, saying no to the sale of recreational marijuana within Naperville's borders.
And we heard from the city council that they directed staff, apparently, according to reporting in the Chicago Tribune, they directed staff to look at the possibility of a non-binding referendum, which apparently could go on the ballot as soon as the primary election on March 17th. So, Amanda, I wonder, you mentioned this dispensary that's already in Naperville, and I gather it's owned by Chicago's Green Thumb Industries. It's called the 3C Compassionate Care Center Medical Dispensary, and they were one of the first to get a license from the state last week?
Which is interesting because, as I noted when I'd actually been covering this earlier, I tried to get a list from the state of what municipalities had taken advantage of this opportunity to opt out and heard from officials that they aren't keeping any such list, and it would be during the application process that people would find out that any businesses would not get approved to open a recreational dispensary if it was not legal within the community's borders. Now this really leaves things in limbo because that license was approved before Naperville went ahead and took this vote. It appears as if the company is going to continue working with the suburb. As I noted, apparently people hadn't really been opposed to the medical facility, but it really does get sort of tricky in this particular instance because these medical marijuana stores were going to get first dibs at beginning to also sell marijuana to any other adults that wanted to without one of those state-approved cards. And they're not able to move locations. So it's not as if this company with its license can suddenly go from, you know, Naperville to neighboring Oswego or Aurora or wherever might be nearby another location. They can't take that license with them. So there are a whole lot of questions here. And Naperville, by the way, isn't alone. I think it's getting a lot of attention because it is this particular situation and that it already has a medical marijuana dispensary, and also because it is so large. And, of course, I got to point out here that every municipality that takes this option is taking money off the table. I think we heard some of that in the opening remarks, but municipalities can charge an extra 3% sales tax, and that would go straight to municipalities' coffers. And so they're giving up on that money, which may change this equation down the line for some of the places that are wary to participate right now. But again, Naperville certainly isn't alone, and it appears as if Illinois is going to be coming into quite a patchwork of, this isn't where marijuana will be legally be able to be utilized. You know, people can still do whatever in the privacy of their own homes, which is what the law really, you know, requires when it comes to, again, this is anybody over the age of 18, but it's just the shops, the sales, and you're hearing from a lot of communities that are saying, we don't want it here.
Well, I have a question. Does the Naperville ordinance forbid people to use marijuana within the city limits?
It can't. That's not part of the ordinance, nor is that allowed by state law.
Naperville being so isolated in such a remote area, so difficult to get to, no appropriate transportation. I mean, it would take days to get there overland, right? So they're effectively going to be able to keep marijuana out of their pristine city. And I say that with a degree of sarcasm because my mother's relatives settled in DuPage County, and 120 years ago they were part of the people who were in the Naperville society. I can remember going to Naperville as a little kid when it was a town of maybe 14,000 people. But anyway, it strikes me as not being very realistic because there are other towns easily within reach, despite my earlier comments in Naperville, where people can go and buy it. So somebody in Naperville who wants to use recreational marijuana will maybe drive to Joliet or maybe go to Woodridge or maybe go to one of the other communities that abut Naperville and just buy it there. And it's money that Naperville is going to lose out on. And I don't see the practicality of all that.
And that is, that's one of the arguments that I believe members of the city council had. There are those that say, we don't want our community to have this. We don't want a store. We don't want it to be easily accessible. And then advocates, including the mayor of Naperville, had said, hey, by allowing shops to sell recreational marijuana within Naperville's borders, we can regulate it. And, of course, there's also the financial benefit.
Yeah, and it reminds me, years and years ago, I went to grad school at Northwestern, and at the time, Evanston was dry. So we would all get it was the Howard Street out back then, the Red Line now, go down to Howard Street, across the border from Evanston into Chicago, and that's where we'd go to drink beer. And there's a place that sold like cheese glasses of beer for 10 cents. So that gives you an idea how long ago it was.
That's a deal.
Yes, it was.
Somebody playing the entertainer over on the pianola in the corner.
Yeah.
I wonder if this, if either of you have a thought on this, if we are seeing a sort of wealth gap developing here, right? The law was structured, the recreational marijuana law was structured in such a way to try and give formerly, how do we say it, communities that had been negatively affected by the war on drugs, so communities of color, black and brown communities, were supposed, there's a point system, and it's supposed to be easier for people in those communities to try and break into this industry after, you know, harsh drug law enforcement has so hurt those communities. But then we're also now at the same time seeing the more affluent areas of the state. Naperville is one. I saw a quote from Wheaton's city manager saying that that city plans to opt out as well. I wonder if we're going to be getting into some sort of divide where, currently, if you want, I guess you can probably get marijuana on the black market just about anywhere. But, if there will be, this is, you know, sort of this industry will be concentrated in areas where there's not as much maybe NIMBYism or something like that. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
Yeah.
No, go ahead, Charlie.
I was going to say, part of it was to help those disadvantaged communities, not necessarily in allowing the use as much as it was to get them into the manufacture, you know, the production of it and this and the selling of it.
The business side, yeah.
As a business, yeah, an enterprise. So I think there will still be enough demand, and I'm sure that people from Naperville will be buying recreational marijuana come January 1st, just like people everywhere else in the state of Illinois.
No, I mean, I do think you have a certain point there, where there is a divide, because again, communities that are really looking for every dollar that they can get may be more apt to get this. It may apt to say, yes, come on in. It may be that some of the communities that are saying no right now come to regret it. Then again, there's sort of a rolling basis of when you're going to have licenses approved. So come down the line, businesses that are looking to make a buck certainly will not, I would presume, hold it against Naperville if they believe that there's a good business opportunity to come in. As you noted, there's a referendum. I believe Grays Lake is taking a year hiatus. They said, we're going to hold off on making any decision. It's not allowed, but just for a 1 year's time, and then they'll evaluate and see how it's gone elsewhere. I'm guessing, and I know that earlier in my reporting, there were a lot of downstate communities that were considering this. There's certainly, I think, a cultural divide. And to me, it's sort of interesting because you do also have communities that are permitted to say no, for example, to liquor within their borders, or at least liquor stores, liquor sales. Again, it's similar. You can't say no, you can't drink in your own home. But they could say no to liquor stores. And there are, in fact, some. There aren't many. Again, the state apparently does not keep a list, but there are not many. But there are a handful of places in Illinois where that is still the local law.
I think there are still some precincts in Chicago that are dry.
Yes, there certainly are. Mm-hmm.
And Charlie, we saw this with the video gambling law passed about a decade ago now, right? Cities could opt out, and many did.
Yeah, and Chicago being probably the largest, because I've not seen the most recent figures, but a month or so ago, Springfield had more video gaming terminals than any other town in the state.
Yeah, it feels like we're living in a giant casino down here. All right, well, I'm sure we will be continuing to cover the business.
Let me say one other thing that reminds me. When the riverboats were first authorized, 20, 30 years ago? 30 years ago, Chicago was very adamant they did not want a riverboat. Richie Daley made a comment about not wanting one of those putt-putts. And now here we are. Chicago was desperate for a casino, and they've gone a full 180 degrees in looking at whether or not this would be good for the city, whether or not they could use the revenue. So maybe we'll see Naperville do the same kind of a change of course.
All right. Well, we will continue to follow Naperville and every other place in Illinois as they grapple with what to do about the, budding recreational marijuana industry that will be legal come January 1st. Turning now to corruption news, or I guess not corruption news, legally speaking, former Congressman Aaron Schock is officially off the hook for the corruption charges. Amanda, can you tell us, this is something that was foreshadowed or sort of set in motion earlier this year, but what happened this week, Amanda?
Yeah, in March, we first got word that prosecutors were going to be dropping charges against Aaron Schock, at least were he to stay out of trouble for 6 months and pay back some money to congressional campaign funds that he had used for personal expenses. And in fact, that is what happened. He stayed out of trouble for half a year, and now Schock has been officially cleared of any of those corruption charges that he first began to face back in, I believe, 2016. So it is a shocker. You have to use that. It was in March. It's not so much that this came through and was finalized, but it certainly is something that raised eyebrows. That, for instance, of former First Lady Patty Blagojevich, who came out tweeting about it, Brian, saying that she asking where is the outrage, given that Schock is facing no charges, and of course her husband is in prison for 14 years. Jesse Jackson Jr. also, of course, went to prison because of misuse of campaign funds, while instead Schock said he is claiming himself really to be a sort of a victim and says that the drop of charges is vindication, that he shouldn't have faced this in the first place. But there is a whole lot more to the story.
Yeah, there is. And I mean, just we should remind people maybe that this is about him using the original charges accused him of using campaign funds for things like private jets to go to a Bears game and also redecorating infamously. What kind of set this in motion is a Washington Post reporter who got tipped off that there was a congressman who had a rather eccentric design scheme for his Washington office. And apparently he had hired a designer to decorate it and the designer said it was in the style of Downton Abbey, sort of ornate frames and blood red paint on the walls. And I think there were even some peacock feathers. Rex Hupke, I thought, who's a columnist for the Chicago Tribune, quoted Schock saying that these were mistakes, not crimes. And he said, I'm going to try that next time I run a red light and get a red light ticket. I'll tell the judge, you know, it wasn't a crime. It was a mistake. There were real allegations of wrongdoing here, and he is paying back.
To some. I mean, even in part of this deal, he did. While Schock is cleared of charges, his campaign committee admitted to wrongdoing. Schock himself had to pay back that money. He had to pay back some $40,000 plus in back taxes because he admitted that he was given, as a public official, say, tickets, and then he sold them at profit and used that money for personal expense, evidently, and then didn't declare it on his taxes. Enough that it was more than $40,000 worth of evidently profit that he made off of it. So I think there are really a couple of ways to look at this. And one is that a man's political future was brought down and, in a sense, his life ruined for years as he spent time fighting these charges. The other way of looking at it is, wow, is he lucky that he got off what some allege was sloppy prosecuting on the part of the Central District, based in Springfield, prosecutor's office, and mistakes there that they were too aggressive. In fact, a change of course, a judge in totally unrelated matter had to be removed from the case, and the case moved up to Chicago. So it was Schock lucky in that regard, perhaps. In a sense, true justice was met in that he doesn't have a criminal record, and prosecutors were, if you again believe Schock, was over-aggressive. And at the same time, he did, of course, and P.S., he resigned before any charges were brought. He had resigned after reporting by Politico, The Washington Post, The Associated Press, found all sorts of mileage discrepancies that eventually led to these charges. But that wasn't what led shock to end his own political career. So he stepped away, presumably knowing that something was in the wrong. So again, maybe true justice was met. I don't know. I'm not making any sort of judgment in that matter, but certainly people's eyebrows are raised. And I saw some, you know, comments saying, this is a classic case of white male privilege, that he was able to get off. And again, looking at people who didn't. Again, not making any sort of own statement there, merely that, wow, this is something that you don't see happen very often in these sort of cases, given prosecutors' track record in successfully prosecuting corruption cases.
Yeah, and we should emphasize this is not a plea deal in that he, you know, pleaded guilty and got off with a lower sentence or something. This is what's called a deferred prosecution agreement, where by behaving himself for 6 months since the agreement was entered, the charges are dismissed completely. So it's, as you said, he has a completely free criminal record. Some speculation this week, well, now he's eligible to run for office again. But I haven't seen any serious, that was, like I said, was speculation. I haven't seen any serious reporting that that's something he's considering.
You know, I haven't either. I will say, back in March, when this deal was first introduced, Aaron Schock does once again have an active social media feed. He's back on Instagram and not as prolific as he once was. There are some pretty awesome looking vacation shots and such. But in March, he put out a statement that said, quote, some people live their whole lives, well, not a statement, this is on Instagram, some people live their whole lives not knowing who their true friends are. I got to find this out at 33 years old. I'm thankful. I hope this is vindication is as sweet for them as it is for me. He thanks his lawyers, and he gives a couple of quotes. And he says, I'm choosing to focus on what I've learned, and I'm a better person. There's always someone in the world who's having a worse day than you. And along with the final of the four photos that he posted, one was a newspaper headline that was talking about the charges dropped, in fact, from the Peoria Journal Star, it appears. And the final one is a screenshot where it says a reporter had tweeted, Aaron Schock tells me he isn't ruling out another run for public office after being cleared of wrongdoing in a 4-year legal fight. At 37 years old, I don't think I'll ever say never. So make of that what you will, prognosticator.
Well, it occurs to me that, yes, he is legally free and clear, but no one has alleged that he didn't really do all those things that got him in trouble. Right.
Well, again,
he says they're even mistakes, not crimes. Yeah.
Well, but I mean that's the thing. Technically, maybe they're not crimes. But if I'm an average voter and I look at this guy using taxpayer money, using campaign funds to in self-aggrandizement, I'm not going to be happy about it. Yeah, he didn't go to jail. He wasn't convicted of anything. But I'm not sure I want that guy representing me for anything.
There have been plenty of, I mean, I got to say, Charlie, that makes sense, one would think, but we've definitely seen other politicians in the past come back from what would have been perceived as the absolute political brink.
Who
knows?
Some of that was in the past, though, but I think in today's climate, I think it would be much more difficult.
Well, time will tell. Just a little kicker to that story. The Chicago Tribune, I thought, did an admirable job of stretching one interesting sentence from an interview with a top FBI agent in Chicago into an entire story. He is moving on to another assignment in the Bureau and told the Tribune that our corruption program is extremely busy. Expect more to come. Obviously, we've seen a lot of indictments and reports of federal activity of Chicago aldermen, people looking apparently at lobbyists with ties to House Speaker Michael Madigan. So perhaps more shoes to drop in terms of federal investigations here in Illinois. I want to wrap up. We've only got less than 5 minutes left in the show. This week is the formal start of campaign season, beginning on Tuesday. Candidates for most offices running in Illinois who are running in from the major parties could begin circulating political petitions to get their names on the primary ballots. And Amanda, we also heard from a notable state representative who says he is not going to be engaging in that process, won't be seeking re-election.
Another shocker there with Representative David McSweeney, and I think that did catch people off guard, including apparently House Republicans, given that he has just been so energetic about the political process at every step of the way. He had come into office taking out a Republican, in fact, who'd been appointed to fill a seat of a legislator who had passed away while in office, I believe it was. And so you ended up having this guy who kind of came in as a crusader. He fought with very publicly with Governor Bruce Rauner, McSweeney, very conservative, very anti-tax, had definitely gone out of his way to make a name for himself and to get in the media as much as possible, to form relationships with Democrats as well. And lo and behold, not running. Already looking, if you think 2020's elections are coming too heatedly and quickly, just wait. McSweeney said that he is stepping back because he's already looking to concentrate on 2022 when he might run against either U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, or should Secretary of State Jesse White actually hold true to his, unlike Charlie, who said he was going to retire and then very quickly did. Jesse White has said several times that he's going to, and then he ends up running again. This time, McSweeney says if White does, in fact, not run again in 2022, that he will try for a bid as Secretary of State.
And this is because Jesse White routinely runs up margins that would be the envy of totalitarian dictatorships in parts of the state where Democrats do not really compete. He's just seems to be a mostly universally popular politician in Illinois, and he has his name in everyone's wallet. So McSweeney, I think if a name is at all familiar, this is somebody who is in a lot of press reports because he's very accessible. So I saw one commenter online quoting that, you know, half the state house stories this year now have lost their source or will be losing their source. So he is somebody who's been very accessible to the media for better and worse. And as you said, he's also a fairly wealthy individual. And that's one of the reasons I think he felt more free than some of his colleagues, maybe to stand up to Governor Rauner.
He was also a real thorn in the side to the House Republican leadership.
Yes.
Representative Jim Durkin from Western Springs has been accused of being a rhino, Republican in name only, and being a traitor. And McSweeney has taken off after him, to the extent that Durkin took away his House caucus support, which is something that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, and McSweeney, though, it's interesting. Just not only was he a thorn in the side and tweeting against Durkin and speaking out against him, but he never went to caucus meetings. So that's one of the times reporters could always find him when the Republicans were off meeting for an hour, debating strategy and how they were going to approach issues. There he was sitting on the House floor, keeping to himself. So always tried to set himself apart. That is all the time we have for our show. We go now to notes from the field. Charlie Wheeler.
Well, the Des Moines State Fair wrapped up this week, and it showed an increase of roughly 26% in tickets sold, almost 16,000 compared to last year, and revenue generated was up 37%, $97,000 more than last year. And that comes in the wake of a call for a boycott of the fair by people who were very disappointed that the engagement of a band called Confederate Railroad was canceled because of the band's imagery.
That's going to be our time for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Amanda Vinicky of WTTW News and the show Chicago Tonight. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.